The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to romance novelist Jane Peden, whose debut is The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal, a frothy anti-love story that takes advantage of the author's day job insights as an attorney. Stick around, but if you have an affair with a stranger while in Vegas, be warned that despite the marketing promises, what happens in Vegas has a habit of eventually following you home. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you preferred to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of well-intentioned but occasionally horny young women and the lawyers who encourage them to the letter of the law in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Longtime Mr. Media fans, and you're not the only one, Mom, are probably aware that it has been a while since I've had a romance novelist as a guest. I can't explain why that is, except there are hundreds, perhaps thousands of them, and only one of me. But I get a kick out of the genre on occasion, and have enjoyed the previous appearances of Kristen Harmel, Adriana Trigiani, Tracy Ann Warren, Jody Thomas, J.C. Isabella, and Brenda Novak. That's why I was game to read attorney Jane Peden's first novel, The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal. And I cannot tell a lie. I enjoyed the heck out of it. The story has twists and turns from start to finish. The romance comes and it goes, you know, just like in real life. And the sex is hot and steamy, just the way you want it, when you want it. Of course, that makes it sound like McDonald's, doesn't it? Making this book all the more fascinating is that writing love stories is what Jane Peden does at night and on weekends. By day, she is an employment law specialist, a happily married wife whose husband is her paralegal, and she's a mother of two. Yeah, I think you'll love reading The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal, and I think you'll enjoy getting to know my guest, too. Jane Peden, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. But come on, what's the deal, Jane? Being a lawyer doesn't keep you busy enough?
Being a lawyer keeps me too busy sometimes. I write romance novels for fun. One of the best things about writing a romance novel is I can be the one who controls how it all ends. And unfortunately, in lawsuits, despite your best efforts, you don't always get to control the outcome.
Oh, come on. You always win. I mean, the lawyers on TV always win. You must always win, don't you?
Yeah, and the ones on TV manage to take an entire case and finish it in 45 minutes, too. Unfortunately, in real life, it doesn't always work out that way.
It does tend to drag on a little bit, doesn't it?
It does.
When did you get hit by the writing bug? I mean, you know, is it something you always wanted to do?
It's something I've always loved. I can remember being in fifth grade and writing a serial of mysteries and standing up and reading them in front of the class. And I kind of got the writing bug back then. So I always knew someday I would write, but I went through a couple careers. I was in journalism and PR, then decided to go to law school. And one thing that all of my careers have in common, including being a lawyer, is it involves a lot of writing. But through all that time, I've always enjoyed writing more as a hobby, and about 10 years ago decided to really get serious about it and try to get published.
And why romance novels?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is very pragmatic, I guess, that I think 46% of all of the new books that are published every year are romance novels. It's an area that's easier to break into because there's such a huge demand for it. Another reason is I've always loved romance. I've always enjoyed reading romance novels ever since I first read Jane Eyre and then read a lot of the gothic romances, when I was a teenager, Victoria Holt and Phyllis A. Whitney. And I've always enjoyed it because, frankly, life doesn't always have a happy ending. And although I've read a lot of, tortured novels with lots of angst, when I want to go home and relax, I want to read something that has a happy ending where the characters, deal with their struggles. And in the end, love wins out and everyone lives happily ever after. So I've enjoyed reading those. And when I decided to write and be serious about it, why not write what I love to read? So that's really what drew me to it.
And is The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal, is this the first one you've written, or have there been others ahead of it that we may not ever see?
Well, there's one. The first one we will never ever see. It's residing under my bed, as they used to say. Although nowadays, since we don't write on a typewriter, I started one actually when I was about 13, and just finished reading Jane Eyre, and I started writing a romance novel, got about halfway through it, and never completed it. And it was a good thing because I think it was awfully similar to Jane Eyre, let's just say. So perhaps just as well that it never saw the light of day. It was more of a fan fiction type thing. I did write a romance before, a romantic comedy that did well won several romance contests, but never ultimately didn't get published and came close a few times. But I think one of the mistakes a lot of times that new writers make is just continuing to rewrite the same book over and over and over again. And can you imagine if a painter, if an artist who, didn't have success with the first painting, just kept painting over the canvas until it had, 200 layers. Sometimes you need to move on from the first one and use it as a way that you've learned. My second one was a thriller, actually not a romance, although it had some romantic elements in it. But it was a thriller that, unfortunately, my agent looked at it, and when she looked at it around the same time as the one that was ultimately published, and said to me, "Wow, this would have been a great idea if only you had come up with this 10 years ago." I didn't tell her that I actually started writing the book 10 years ago. 10 years to complete it. So those two will probably never be out. But I do have another longer romance, also about lawyers in Florida, that's out now that I'm hoping to get published and haven't heard back yet. And I've even submitted the sequel to The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal to, the same publisher. And I sent that in a few weeks ago, and I'm waiting to hear back on that one.
Okay, well,
actually written, I think, 5 books total, although The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal was the only one so far that's been published.
Well, I'm glad to hear that there's a sequel to The Unexpected Proposal, but I'll ask you about that after we talk about the book a little bit.
Okay.
Tell me how you did you approach writing The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal? Did you approach it any differently than the books that preceded it? Can you pinpoint why this one got an editor's attention and, sold, whereas the others have not yet?
Well, this one's written toward a very specific market. Like in the romance industry, there are books called category romances, or sometimes they're called series romances, that have a very specific reader expectation. And they're all between maybe 45,000 to 60,000 words in length. So they're the smaller books. They're the ones that if you went to the bookstore, you might see it, or even to like a Walmart or a Target, you may see an end cap that has these books that are short romances, and they're broken down into different specific lines. For example, you know, my publisher, Entangled, has a specific line called Indulgence. And in the Indulgence books, the reader has a very specific expectation. The books are always going to have a hero who's, you know, very successful, very wealthy. This is someone who's the, you know, the CEO of the company. It's the millionaire or the billionaire. It's the man that doesn't fly first class. He takes the, you know, his private jet. So that's the hero. And then the love interest is always, you know, typically a woman who's independent, who probably doesn't have as much of the financial, you know, wherewithal as the hero does, but she's an independent and a, you know, modern woman. And there are always tropes, you know, romance tropes that, you know, you follow. I mean, the same, because I've heard people say that writing romance is formulaic. It's not really a formula, but it's just as if you were buying a cozy mystery. There's certain things you expect to see in a cozy mystery. If you're reading, you know, detective genre, there are certain expectations that you have. And with these romances, particularly the ones written for these particular lines, you know, like mine was, there are expectations. And, you know, mine, I put in several of the tropes. You know, there's a secret baby in my book. There's a reunion. People who were, you know, were lovers in the past and are reunited. That's another element. And the marriage of convenience, that's another trope. That happens in this book too. So by following those, kind of putting those ingredients in, there was a much better chance of it getting published. This was the first time I had written something where I was, instead of just sitting down and writing a story, I had a specific goal. I'm going to write a story, and here's where I think it will sell. Here's the niche in the market that I think it fits into. So that was a little bit of a different experience for me.
Interesting. Did you change the way you go about writing these books from the first, well, excluding the one that you started writing when you were 13, did you were there things that you changed? Did you show the books to anyone? Did you start writing, you know, maybe, I know you're in St. Petersburg. Did you start writing in Kawa instead of in Starbucks? I mean, what was different from the beginning to this book?
Nothing really different about the process of writing, except that I think the fact that I had written several books from beginning to end before this has made me a better writer. I'm also a member of, you know, RWA is the Romance Writers of America. It's a national organization. It has local chapters. The Tampa Area Romance Authors is the chapter here in the Tampa area. I've been a member of it for some time, and it offers a lot of seminars, a lot of craft, you know, skills in writing. So I feel that over the years, you know, my writing really has improved. So that's been helpful. I don't use, unlike a lot of writers, I don't have a critique group. I don't use a critique partner when I'm writing. For me, I also tend to, I'm what they call a pantser. I write by the seat of my pants. You know, there are many, and there's a lot of ways. There is no right way to write a book, but there are a lot of fiction writers who put up big boards and stickies and outlines, and they write very detailed character interviews before they ever sit down and start writing the book. That doesn't work for me. What works for me is to sit down in front of the blank screen and start typing. When I start typing, I typically just have an idea. I have a hook, and then I see where the story takes me. And with this, you know, this particular book, I sat down and tried to come up with the most outrageous situation I could that would, for two people, and make it as unlikely as possible that these two people could ever find a way to have a happy ending and fall in love. And then try to write myself out of that box. And that was really the sheer fun in writing this book.
And that's what I think made the book appeal to me so much. Because, you know, I said this at the top, I don't read a lot of these books. So when I read one, I really want it to work for me. I want it to be fun. And I think you describe it pretty well. You keep putting them in situations where, how can they get out of this? How can they resolve this? How can they, you know, make their lives happy, or will they have to end apart? Well, and I keep saying, no, they're not going to end apart. These books don't end like that. But it's well written. I don't know how to say it more simply. It's a well written book. Do you want to explain? You're welcome. I mean, it's well deserved. Do you want to explain a little bit about what the plot is, what Sam and Camilla are all about?
Sure. And when I sat down to write the book, I thought, well, suppose you have a successful lawyer in Miami. And 5 years ago, he had a two-week fling in Las Vegas, right before, after he left his, you know, corporate lawyer job and was on the eve of opening an exciting new firm where he expected to, you know, make millions and millions of dollars and bring in the huge verdicts, et cetera. But he takes a vacation in Las Vegas. He meets a very attractive, cool blonde, someone Alfred Hitchcock would love, you know, in the hotel bar. And they have a two-week affair. And then things are, you know, he's starting to feel a little too close to her, and he's scared by that because what's he going to do, get tangled up? He's about to start his new business in Miami. He doesn't want to get tangled up with some woman he just met in a bar in Las Vegas. So he kind of dumps her, and he heads back to Miami. He becomes extremely successful. 5 years later, she shows up at his office, and you know, he's not heard anything from her since, and with an unusual proposal and quite unexpected, and she demands that he marry her in order to protect their 4-year-old son, who he never knew he had. Then I threw into the mix the fact that, you know, he learns that she married somebody else a week after he left her in Las Vegas, that she's apparently been passing off the, you know, her son. She married a paraplegic billionaire now he's died. And his parents, her in-laws, are waging a custody, you know, battle trying to get the grandchild because they think that Camilla is nothing but, you know, a little, you know, money-grabbing gold digger. And so they've got a lot. They're from an old money in the Northeast, and they have a lot of power and influence. And she feels who's the only person she can turn to help her out of the situation is Sam. You can imagine Sam's reaction. Sam is not pleased to have this woman show up with the 4-year-old son.
And as they say in sitcoms, hilarity ensues.
That's right, exactly. I try to throw in as much, you know, complication as possible. Yeah, Sam is someone whose own father abandoned him. So his worst nightmare is that he would ever have a son and not be there for his son. Now he's been, you know, unwittingly placed in that position. And who's to blame? Camilla. Camilla has very good reasons for why she, you know, married, you know, her first husband, Danny, the billionaire paraplegic, and how she got into this situation. But Sam pretty much doesn't want to hear about it because he's just ready to assume the worst about her from the beginning. All he wants to do is figure out a way, you know, he wants to marry her somehow, then, you know, then divorce her and get custody of the child and just get her out of their lives forever. Obviously, Camilla thinks that he's going along with her plan to protect the child. So it's kind of an interesting roller coaster that they go on throughout.
It is trying
to find their happy ending.
It is well told, and it's definitely a fun book. Now, have you gotten much response at this point from other attorneys? Has anyone kind of indicated, you know, from the legal profession? Do we know how they stand on the unexpected proposal?
I don't know. I do know a number of other lawyers who are writers who have enjoyed the book. So far, I've not had anyone. I got a lot of reviews as well of the book on Amazon and on reviewing blog sites. And it's kind of interestingly, so far, no one has stepped forward and said, well, I'm a lawyer and this legal thing in the book would never happen like this. Because it's funny. You see that because you will see that all the time.
I need to get a copy of the book in front of James Gripondo, who's the Miami lawyer turned mystery novelist. Let's see what he has to say about it. All right. So, and I thought you were very fair in terms of showing the good, the bad, and quite a bit of the alleged Miami lawyer ego. Sam is quite full of himself at times. He has a few things to learn about life.
One of the funny things in reactions to the book, my biggest concern was likability for Camilla. I was afraid because here you have a woman who, you know, got pregnant with one man, married another, and did not tell the father of the baby that he was the father. And I thought that's something that can be tough to sell in a book because you want, you know, you always want the characters to be likable. They can be jerks a lot of the time, but the readers have to identify with your characters. So I really did worry about that. But to my surprise, readers love Camilla and they hate Sam.
Oh, yeah.
kind of funny.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is interesting because for most of us, the only Camilla we know married Prince Charles and had been carrying on an affair with him while he was married to Lady Di. So, you know, or Prince Diana, I guess. So, you know, it was interesting to come full circle and actually find a Camilla that was likable.
Yes, I'm redeeming the name Camilla here.
There you go.
People who are named Camilla now can be compared to my character.
And I guess now for people who are thinking about reading the book, now that you've revealed that there is a sequel in the works, another good reason to jump on board, because they can read the further adventures of Sam and Camilla.
Yes, Sam and Camilla do appear in the second book, but it's really Richie's story, who is Sam's partner. Sam has two law partners in his business. There's, there's Sam, Richie, and Jonathan, who started the firm together. So in the second book, Richie finds romance. So then there's a third book with Sam. I have another character I'm thinking about doing a fourth book on, too, that kind of grew out of this. But it's, Sam and Camilla will appear in that book, which is kind of nice. I think readers like to see the characters who got their happy ending before. They like to see how things have worked out. How's their life, in the next year, what's happened with them? But then still the focus is on, Richie. And Richie, the readers got to meet him a little bit in Sam and Camilla's book. Mm-hmm. And I have had a number of reviewers who contacted me and who posted and said, when are you going to tell Richie's story? I really like Richie. He seems like a much nicer guy than that Papa Sam.
Now, Richie and Jonathan, one of them was kind of a shark and one of them was kind of a more of a fatherly figure, more of a little, maybe a little religious, maybe?
Am I remembering this right?
Mm-hmm. That's Richie. Okay, yeah. That sounds like the kind of guy that the romance audience would go for.
Right. Richie is much more of a, kind of a salt of the earth guy. He's a little religious. He's very serious. He also tends to be kind of stuck in his views and his perception of things, too. He's a little stubborn, a little close-minded as well. Jonathan, who will be the hero in the third book, is much more of a player. It's going to be kind of interesting.
I was going to say, it sounds like Richie's book, probably not going to be a lot of sex in that book.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Really? Good for him.
There's some sex.
Good for you, Richie.
Richie's religious. He's a nice guy, but, he doesn't have anything against sex. He's just a very nice guy. So it takes a little longer to get to the sex part in Richie's book, but it's worth it once you get there.
All right. Well, so and I got to ask you about this. Is it a little bit weird to write the sex scenes and know, I know you and I know your husband and I know you're close. And, I mean, is it weird to write the sex scene and know your husband's going to read it? And then you have two kids and, people that you deal with. I mean, is it a little weird to expose that part of yourself?
It can be a little weird in a way. It's, I think it's a little embarrassing to my daughter, who's happy that I write under a pen name because she doesn't want her friends to read my book.
Wait, you write under a pen name?
Yes, Jane Keaton is my pen name.
What? This is the first I'm hearing about this. Somebody, okay, all right, so this is not your real name. No wonder the credit check went the way it did. Okay.
Not my real name. Jane is my middle name, and Keaton's a family name. But I chose really for practical reasons, because I am a practicing attorney, and I've put a lot of effort into creating, an online reputation for myself, for people, clients to be able to Google me and find me. And if I wrote under the same name that I practice law under, I think people would just get confused. So number one, people would get confused because is she a writer or is she a lawyer? And, secondly, unfortunately, I have to bust the myth that once someone sells a book, they become a millionaire and they can quit their day job forever and do nothing else, because it's really doesn't work out that way, unless maybe you're James Patterson or Nora Roberts or one of the famous authors. But I don't want clients to look at me as an author and say, wow, she's never going to be around for the end of my lawsuit. She's just going to quit practicing law. Because it's really not my intention. I love my law. I love my law job, but I also love to write, and I'm trying to do both.
Excellent. All right. So we know now that there are one or two new books that are in the pipeline. Hopefully we'll have access to soon. And this is the part of the show where I say, folks, You can find Jane Peden's first published novel, The Millionaire's Unexpected Proposal, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it up right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you are watching this on MrMedia.com, you probably can look below the video and you'll see the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon. You can order it in print, or you can get it immediately as an ebook, pretty much to any platform that you use. Kindle, Nook, I'm assuming, Kobo, maybe Spark, or whatever it is, you can get the book. And you have a website, Jane?
Yes, it's just janepeden.com. So JanePeden is my website. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, and at Entangled Publishing. There's an author page. I have an author page on Amazon as well. Most of my books, although it is available in a print version, it's primarily sold as an ebook, and which is great because it's much less expensive, frankly, to buy it as an ebook. And one of the advantages, especially when I'm writing a series like this, if you go to bookstores and you see this type of book, the romance series, the romance will be on the shelf for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and then it's gone, and then the next crop of them come out. And what I'm hoping is that when readers read my second book, they'll want to go back and read the first one. It's only a click away. So that's kind of the joys of having books through e-publishing. You never have to worry about the dwindling shelf space in the bookstores and, you know, the sad, unfortunate dwindling of bookstores, the numbers of bookstores themselves, sure, because it will be perpetually there. And I've actually discovered a lot of writers that I love by reading a current book and then going to, you know, Amazon or Nook and go back and find their whole backlist, which makes it a lot easier than things used to be. No longer do you have to worry that something you really want to read is out of print.
Very good. Well, Jane Peden, or whoever you may be, really enjoyed the book, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
It was a pleasure being here today. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Turn up the stereo.